All right. So let's start today with the discussion on Chesamet Aleph. This is the Gemara we saw. Again, I mentioned the first few topics that we're covering are just going through the Seder Adapim as they raise important issues of Tzedakah. So on Daf Chesamet Aleph, we have a statement of the Gemara that takes a stance on the scope of Tzedakah. What types of issues do we think Tzedakah applies to? Yeah. So what do we have on Chesamet Aleph? We have Rabba imposed tzedakah on the Yesomim of the house of Bar Marion. Abaye objected. He said, what about this statement of Shmuel Bar Yehuda? Ein poskin tzedakah la Yesomim afilu lepidyon shvuyim. That you don't obligate orphans to pitch in for tzedakah, even if that tzedakah is designated for pidyon shvuyim. So what does that imply for our purposes? What does that suggest? Josh?
Pidyon Shvuyim is tzedakah.
Yeah, seems to suggest that Pidyon Shvuyim is a type of tzedakah. Do you all agree with that, Diak? I think it's a very valid Diak. And that seems to suggest that tzedakah is more than just about being mefarnes aniyim. It's more than just giving money to the poor. It sounds like tzedakah has a much broader connotation. Yeah? Yeah, we actually saw some of this in the last year on Sunday. Part of that broader connotation of tzedakah was the Gemara's application of this, and here I'll just give you the Rambam's codification of it in Matnas Aniyim Tes Beis, that here's the formulation. Sorry, not Tes Beis. Tes Yud Beis. There's tzedakah biksus, and then there's tzedakah likvura, that are part of the mitzvah of tzedakah, right? So it's not just about giving food to the aniyim, but these other types of things, clothing people, burying people who can't afford it, is part of it. And on the second daf Chesamet Aleph, it seems to extend our conception of tzedakah to pidyon shvuyim. What is pidyon shvuyim? Yeah, redeeming captives, right? It's an interesting question whether you think they actually have to be captured in order to be subject to pidyon shvuyim. You might say something like evacuating people from a war zone might be a type of pidyon shvuyim, depending on what you think the actual criteria are. Now, the Shulchan Aruch in Yerideya Reish Nun Beis in Hilchos Tzedakah, so you can see this is clearly within Hilchos Tzedakah discussion, the Shulchan Aruch codifies what in this section of Hilchos Tzedakah and Yerideya? What does he include? Pidyon Shvuyim, correct. And you notice the Rambam does the same thing. The Rambam in Matnos Aniyim Parakhas Halacha Yud also includes Pidyon Shvuyim in his discussion of Hilchos Tzedakah. Okay, so there's this agreement amongst the Mechabrim that Pidyon Shvuyim conceptually belongs within the discussion of Tzedakah. That just follows our Gemara's characterization of it in Baba Sadaf Ches. And then you get this interesting comment of the Rama working off the Marik. So what does the Rama here say? Volunteer to tell us about the Rama's ruling. Ned?
Yeah, so if somebody designating certain funds towards Tzedakah, can't reallocate those funds for purposes of pidyon shvuyim without the consent of the community.
Yeah, somebody who makes a promise to donate towards tzedakah, he can't discharge that obligation by giving it for pidyon shvuyim. Yes? Everybody agree with that? Now the question is, what explains this psak? This psak on its own, on its face, seems to separate pidyon shvuyim from discussions of tzedakah, correct? Why might that not be the case? Eitan?
You could say that there's a difference between tzedakah and giving to the poor.
Well, you want to say the difference between tzedakah and giving to the poor?
Yeah, I mean, like, giving to the poor is instead of tzedakah.
Okay, so that's a way of disagreeing with Rama's psak, right? But I'm saying, let's say, can you agree with Rama's psak, but resist the conclusion that tzedakah and pidyon shvuyim are two unrelated concepts. Salty?
We can do what the Ma'ariv says, which is the tzedakastam, which is l'shem bnei adam.
Good. That this is really just about not halachic concepts, not the objective real-world relationship between these halachic concepts, but rather a sub-discussion of hilchos nedarim, which depends on people's meanings, how people use language, not how the concepts are truly related to each other, but what people have in mind when they use these words and these terms, right? So we have to, we'll take a look at the Ma'arik, who makes that point. Does everybody see that? So you could agree with the Rama's psak and just say, well, that's because psychologically people get stuff wrong. There's a misconception out there that thinks that tzedakah is about money to the poor, not including pidyon shvuyim, even though at the true halachic level, those two things are one and the same. Benji, did you have a comment on that?
Yeah, I was just wondering what you do with the last part of it, where it says, not even da b'nei yir.
The b'nei yir can do whatever they want.
No, meaning that, like, if someone makes a neder to give tzedakah, you can't give it for pidyon shvuyim unless the b'nei yir, like, agree to it. What the b'nei yir agree to somehow affects, like, what is considered...
It's a great question.
Definition.
What I would respond is that the B'nai Yir could accept it as tzedakah and then reallocate it. Right, so they could say, we're accepting this as tzedakah for the poor, and then the B'nai Yir have this power to redesignate funds that's in their control.
Reallocate funds from like a discretionary fund?
Yeah,
towards that,
exactly. Like they put it in the communal pushka for aniyim, and then they use their kahal powers to reassign it.
Okay, so they can accept it as tzedakah.
That's what I would say, yeah. That's what I would say. Ned, do you have a comment on this?
Yeah, in which case, tzedakah becomes more of a social... I think we were trying to say last year. Too sure, I know. Where tzedakah is now just another thing, like social infrastructure.
Yeah, let's get to, we'll get to that. We're going to get to that straight away. Let's look at the Ma'arik. Unless, Josh, you have a pre-Ma'arik comment?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know. I see it more that Shvuyim really are aniyim, meaning even if they technically have, like, you know, a certain asset value or whatever, if they're in a situation where they can't use any money, wouldn't you just say that they're a poor person?
Yeah. So I think that's the Rambam's view. Did anybody see this Rambam in Manas Aniyim Chesed? That's on the board right now. So we'll get to it in a second. But I think the Rambam's characterization of Pidyon Shvuyim is saying exactly what Josh said. There's no reason for you to have the intuition that Pidyon Shvuyim is any different from helping out a poor person. Because a shavui, someone who's in captivity, is just as vulnerable on all fronts as an ani is vulnerable. Right, Josh? Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. But the Ma'arik and Siman Zayin had to address this question about the relationship between tzedakah and Pidyon Shvuyim. Look, I think walking into the room today, or walking into the sugya, how many of you had the intuition that tzedakah and pidyon shvuyim are separate concepts? I mean, you would not expect to see them in the same place in the Rambam, in Shulchan Aruch, right? We in agreement on that? Seems like the overwhelming majority. The Ma'arik in Siman Zayin here was asked about the following case. What's the case that he was asked about? What was the legal issue before him, Daniel?
A certain Jew in a country was taken captive and was going to be like killed for it or something. So then the Jewish community got together to try to raise enough money to free him.
Yeah. So the community was raising money to free him.
So there were, right, so generally speaking, this community has a rule that when it comes to tzedakah, everyone pays an equal amount.
Excellent. The community has a background rule or a takana in place that when it comes to tzedakah, everyone contributes equally. In the Forum, it says, Irak Shave Bishave, because when it comes with Hotzas, Tzedakah Yifra Kolachad Bishave. So now this fellow was arguing.
Right, so Reuven was arguing that Pidyon Shvuyim should be categorized as Tzedakah and every person should pay equally.
Excellent. Basically, Reuven's argument was we all know the Tzedakah collection rule. It's a poll tax or a head tax, everybody just pays evenly. Pidyon Shvuyim is one aspect of tzedakah. So when you're raising money to free this captive, we all contribute equally. Very good argument by Reuven, right? Yeah. Smart argument. What does the Kahal respond?
So the Kahal responds that that the shtar is referring to staka stam, and that...
Yeah, what's considered staka?
Considered to be only given to poor people.
Good. Given to aniyim, A.
Lemachal. Lemachal mishal
miksos. Good. So notice two main characteristics that the Kahal sees as defining staka. A, that the recipient is indeed a poor person, that he's an ani, and that the type of goods that staka is there to provide is machal, mishta, and ksus, food, drink, and clothing. Yes? And pidyon shvuyim doesn't satisfy any of those criteria, because this guy maybe is an ashir. Right, he's just as rich as everybody else. Happens to be he's in jail, but he has plenty of assets. And moreover, the money is being used to bribe or pay off some government official. It's not being used for clothing and food. So pretty good argument that it shouldn't be included in staka. Okay, so what does the... I'll just point out, it's interesting that the Kahal, when they make their arguments, they themselves only appear to like the intention... Like, what do people have in mind when they think of tzedaka? Right, Shekain Darkam. Tell us about this, Daniel.
Right, Shekain Darkam, Tanadam, Kro, the tzedaka of Olim Yamshin, right, that when it comes to the way that they describe what they consider to be tzedaka is referring to giving stuff over to Niyam and Machal and Shmutzos.
Good. So there is this linguistic recognition that these categories are different. So the Marik, in his answer... starts off by saying, look, when it comes to these questions of nedarim, what is controlling? What do we really care about?
Lashon b'nei adam.
What do people mean when they use certain words? So it's great. And then he says, you brought some interesting rayas, but he thinks if you look at the lashon of Chazal, actually, the evidence is against the Kahal.
Right.
What's his raya?
He brings out a Gemara and Baba Basra.
Excellent. That argamar that says, Ein poskim tzedaka al yisom afilu pidyon shvuyim, which implies that pidyon shvuyim is a subset of hilchos tzedaka. And what does he say? Good. So just the linguistically, Chazal assume that tzedaka is included. Sorry, that pidyon shvuyim is included in tzedaka. And it says, devalashon chachamim. Yeah. Now, you know, you could say this is all just about language, and like, why do and Chazal use the word tzedaka to refer to pidyon shvuyim? But I take it that the reason why Chazal used the word tzedaka for pidyon shvuyim is because they think that pidyon shvuyim is conceptually part of tzedaka, right? And then he says, that makes sense. Chazal's position or Chazal's usage of the word is intuitive.
Right. He says anytime that
yeah. So notice the rationale. The rationale here is that when we talk of tzedaka, we're talking about this description. Mevater mamon lechavero al tzara chesed v'harachmanos. That's what tzedaka means. And then pidyon shvuyim is also a type of tzedaka under that description. Okay, now, do you guys have thoughts on whether that's a good description of what tzedaka is? Ariel?
I guess Benji and I were just kind of trying to figure out like, what scope does that have? Like, I guess giving money to institutions, is that now considered tzedaka because those could be considered chesed?
Yeah, for... good. I mean, are you having like Rachmanos or a Chesed for an institution? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So like, well, I thought you might say maybe it's not Lechavero. I don't know. If you like kind of check out to YU, you say, Lechavero can't be like a legal entity. Maybe. You know, it's like the Gemara always darshins, Shor Re'ehu V'lo Shel Hektish, things like that. But also al tzara chesed v'harachmanos, right? It's got to be based off chesed and rachmanos. So what does that mean? Like the motivation, out of mercy? It's kind of a difficult thing to pin down.
Like if they're not in a dire situation, is it still considered
stuff? Yeah. Yeah, and what's mevater? Like giving up money? So let's hear Daniel, and then Zakaria.
I think, first off, I don't know if I should say categorizing an institution as part of it, because I don't know if there's really Rachmaninoff so much involved in that.
Right.
But I think of course I'm thinking like pity and like a person in like a tough spot. And I think Mivatzer, just in this case, it's just like you have no expectation of giving it back. It's just like
You're giving up.
You're giving it up.
Yeah. So Pidyon and Shvuyim would fall under this description.
Yeah.
Yeah. But other things less so. You know, also classic tzedakah, by the way, of, you know, hiring somebody who needs a job. It's not clear that that would comfortably fall under this description, because you're not mevater mamon if you're getting a service in exchange for what they're, right? They're, you're paying somebody to do a service for you, and then you're getting return on your payment. So maybe that's not vitor. Sorry.
I mean, I think this is an accurate sociological observation. I think it's pretty difficult to justify that there's, like, so to speak, like a Torah's perception. First of all, does violence, like the choice of word of tzedek or tzedakah versus chesed?
Yeah.
Are distinct words?
Yeah, and that's hugely important for what we're going to be looking at in this sugya about kfiya on tzedakah.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, tzedek comes up in strict legal context, like the stikwa tzedek. Or just in general, like the Rambam, right? Like in English, like righteousness, like what is right, what is becoming to him, what is due to him.
Yeah.
So I think just like
we should compare that.
It's a correct observation. It's so interesting that this kind of shift is so old, but like that's, I don't know. I think that it's not so precise.
Yeah, so I think what Zakaria is saying is that, look, we're about to study a whole sugya of kfiya on tzedakah. That's, it seems like even in its for some rishonim, the main concept of tzedakah is more closely resembles justice or tzedakah in the sense of tzedek. Subject to kfiya, you can force somebody to give it. It's actually not up to them whether they have chesed and rachmanas, right? If the money is entitled, if the money ought to go to the ani, halachically speaking, then it's his, regardless of what the donor wants. And that's totally inconsistent with the Ma'arik's formulation here, that staka connotes vitur mamon lechaber al tzad chesed rachmanos. Are we in agreement on that? Yeah. So Zakaria thinks maybe this speaks to some shift at some point. But
there's like a,
charity versus
right, it's like the anti like Christian influence or like polemic there. Like, oh, charity is like the finish was
different. Yeah. All right, we'll pick up on that. So I do think that yes, this is a red flag on what it is we're thinking of when we think of tzedakah. Right, so rachmanas, chesed, vitur, those are all controversial characterizations. Josh,
I don't know if this is a stupid dick or not, but it doesn't seem like he's saying that. This is all-encompassing of things that are tzedakah. This is more his explanation to me, at least, of why Pidyon Shvuyim would be called tzedakah. He's not saying that this is the only thing that
right,
would
be right. It's sufficient for something to be called tzedakah if it's rachmanos, vitor, and chesed.
Right.
But of course, you could have tzedakah that's not this.
Maybe.
Yeah. So he's giving us a sufficient condition, not a necessary condition. That's how you'd put it. Yeah, that's fair. Anybody else have a thought on this, Marik? I just want to point out. So the Ma'arik himself ends up saying, that's all from Chazal's perspective, and that's all the true conceptualization of tzedakah, that Pidyon Shvuyim and tzedakah are interrelated. But in the end of the day, as a question of nedarim, it depends on Lashon B'nai Adam. Right? That's his closing line, and that's how they're on Ma'apaskins. Right? So if our common language deviates from the halacha's language, then we defer to our common language on questions of nedarim. Yeah? I do want to say, topic for a different time, that I think there's a very interesting issue that's raised in this discussion about the extent to which we want our common language categories to map onto the Torah's categories of classification. Just something to think about. Like, is it a bad thing if our notion of tzedakah slides away from the Lashon Chazal's use of tzedakah? Something to file away in the back of your mind. Okay. Ned, do you have a thought on that? Zev?
It reminds me of our discussion in philosophy about like the cutting of the world.
Words versus concepts.
Or how
you conceptualize the things in the world. Okay, the Rambam in Matnas Aniyim in Perek Ches Halacha Yud has a comment here, as I mentioned earlier, about pigeon shvuyim being the Rambam subsumes pigeon shvuyim discussions under Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, which is Hilchos Tzedakah. In the Rambam, it's even more explicit that Tzedakah is Matnas Aniyim, right, to the poor. Yet he includes pigeon shvuyim discussions in this context. So let's take a volunteer to read this Rambam Ches Yud.
So he says, "Pidyon shvuyim kodem lo parnasas aniyim lo chsusan." So pidyon shvuyim takes precedence in communal funds to supporting aniyim and to clothing them. In the chametz v'gedola, pidyon shvuyim, there's no great mitzvah like it. Shashavoy harayim bechlal harayim hatzimayim ha'arumim lo'omim b'sefanas defashos. Because someone who is captive is included within someone who is starved and thirsty and naked and stands in moral power.
Yeah, I think you spoke about this a little bit in your how your
work.
So the Rambam here says that a shavui is starving, right? He's thirsty, and he's in need of clothes.
Yeah.
Now, I guess at the most basic level, the Rambam's saying that all the goods that an ani is lacking are also lacked by the shavui. Yes?
Yeah.
So maybe he has money stashed away somewhere in a bank account, but if it's not accessible to him, for all intents and purposes, he's an ani. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very sensible way of reading the Rambam. Yeah? So I think that's actually a little different from the way the Ma'arik was thinking about why pidyon shvuyim should be included in tzedakah. The Ma'arik said it's because kol vitur mamon l'chaver al tzad chesed v'rachmanos is called tzedakah. So even if one is about clothing the poor and feeding the poor, and the other is about paying to get somebody out of prison, they both instantiate this virtue of giving up money out of compassion. That's the common denominator that the Ma'arik sees. The Rambam, maybe more consistent with his scheme of matnos aniyim, tzedakah being gifts to the poor, says, oh, the shavui meets the description of an ani, because he's starving, he's tzame, he's arum, and those are that's why he meets the description of tzedakah. Ned?
Yeah, I just argue the characterization of Rambam as only viewing tzedakah as to the poor. He includes it in aniyim.
Well, not that it's only the poor. Well, you're saying my characterization of matnas aniyim?
Yeah, he includes within matnas aniyim also various matanot that you give to Beit Knesset, that, which gets into the institutional question, but it seems to be more expansive than just people who are impoverished.
Yeah. Well, you could say, you know, those get thrown in. Just because where else should they go? And you could say that about pigeon shvuyim also. You could say, but if you think the dominant feature of Hilchos Matnas Aniyim is Matnas Aniyim, as the Rambam characterizes it, then this characterization of pigeon shvuyim makes a lot of sense. Right? The Rambam wants it to be consistent with what he sees as the main characterization of tzedakah. No? Well,
he almost has to pigeonhole.
Yeah, here.
Yeah.
Right. Now, we'll look at the Beis HaKnesses stuff. It could be that that's an exception. Right? It's a matana that Rama just threw in Matnas Aniyim, even though it doesn't fit neatly with the scheme. Okay? Tzachar, you had a hand on this?
You could argue he doesn't just view it as a catch-all kitchen sink case of tzedakah. I think the only discounts of Fasho's factor is like a pretty big X factor.
Well, you have some costs on this already.
This is true.
Right? given the Dvar Torah, right?
But I think you don't generally bring up Sefas Nefashos by other tzedakah.
Right. Except that you could say that this is a separate factor, a non-tzedakah factor that bears on Pidyon Shvuyim. But I'm saying there's tzedakah reasons to support him, and then non-tzedakah reasons of Losamet Adam Reyacha. So, for example, in the next line, let's see, so go ahead, Vamalim.
Vamalim may not be Pidyono. Harizah overall, Lotamet Tzedakah, Lotikot Tzedakah.
So those are really, those are tzedakah psukim.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that I'm saying explicitly, not even in the Marik, there was a way to read the Marik as saying, oh, it's just about Lashon. Lashon Bnei Adam, Lashon Chazal. In the Rambam, it's clearly more substantive than that because he's appealing to the psukim of tzedakah. But then he also appeals to. So those, I think, are non-tzedakah psukim that would explain the Omid B'Sakanas Nefashos. So I think just the most straightforward pshat way of reading the Rambam is that there are two dinim in Pidyon Shvuyim. There's a tzedakah component and a Losamet Adam Reyacha component. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could disagree. You could say, you know, my father would probably say something along the lines that it becomes a juggernaut. You know, like the two latch on to each other in some way where you can't really distinguish that tzedakah dimension from the Sakanas Nefashos component. And you could say that. I'm not opposed to it. I just think the simplest way to read it is that there are two dinim going on here. Okay, and then also. Right. So I think here he's just saying, yeah, there are also all these other mitzvos that get piled on to that Pidyon Shvuyim, because not only doing tzedakah and saving a life, there's also hatarecha kamocha and all these other good things, right? So I don't want to get into the Pidyon Shvuyim discussion, because you're right, then there's a lot of interesting directions to go into. But I do think it's striking that here the Rambam just characterizes the shavui as an ani. Yeah? Now, there's a clear nafkamina between the Marik and the Rambam. What's the nafkamina? Somebody give me a clear case. It could be a proper noun, someplace in upstate New York. What? What's the nafkamina?
Jail.
Well, which jail?
Otisville.
Yeah, Otisville. Yeah. Tell us about Otisville.
It's a fine institution that many pious men are residing in, from what I understand.
It's a book of Chester. It's where they have that real meat and about kosher.
Right. And about kosher. Right. It's basically a jail upstate where, you know, people have it pretty good. I mean, as good as it could be. You have food, you have clothes, you have Dafyomi, you have Starim, you have Zmiros, right? I saw somebody in Lower Merion a few Shabbosim ago who was wearing a black baseball cap. It said Otisville Kollel on the front, and it said Frum on the inside. Oh, sorry, Frum on the outside. That was his. But that's a clear nafkamina between the Rambam and the Marik, because they would not meet the Rambam's description. He's not Bichal Re'evim Smeim and Arumim, but it would meet the Maharik's characterization, because surely you're being mevater mamon chavero to get this guy out of prison. Right, so there are just clear nafkamina about what you see as the salient feature of tzedakah here. Okay, thoughts on that? Comments on this? So that's the first issue I wanted to bring to your attention about the limits or the scope of tzedakah and what it includes. Good, Ariel? Yeah, thoughts on this? Okay. The second example I wanted to bring to your attention very quickly, also about the scope of tzedakah, is the question of the chiyuv to support your young children. So anybody prepare this Rambam and Yud Beis Yidalit and Yud Beis Tesvav? So Ned, tell us about it. Ned, tell us about it.
You're only chayev from
feed
your kids up to the age of six.
Yeah, so you're only chayev to feed your kids up until the age of six. Okay? Now, that does seem to be a din d'oraisa, right? I just want to point out, which mitzvah would that fall under? Well, Tom Torah. It's actually not clear to me which mitzvah would fall under. That's fine. I'm just giving this as an example. Maybe it doesn't matter, like how you classify the mitzvah. Like this seems to be pretty important din, regardless of whether it's one of the Tayyag mitzvahs. Maybe it's just a din d'oraisa, even if it's not codified as an instantiation of one of the 613. Just hearkening back to our earlier discussion about this. But yeah, by all means, look around. See where some of the money mitzvahs try to codify this. From six and above, what's the din, Ned?
If there's takanas chazal, that you should feed them until they grow up.
Yeah, so there's takanas chazal, takanas usha, that you should feed your kids until they're gedolim. But that's not subject to kfiya. You can't force somebody to support them after six. You can embarrass them, say somebody's not supporting their kid, he's worse than this type of these animals. But you can't enforce it legally. But then we get this qualification. This comes from the Marin Ksuvis and Mem Tes, which we'll look at. So what does Ram tell us here, though?
If we don't know how much money the person has, whether or not we can sustain his family, that's what we're not going to force.
Exactly. From six and above, the din that we're not going to force you to support your kids, that's only if we don't know that you're financially capable. But if we know that you're financially capable of supporting your children, then we'll force you to support them until they're gedolim. On what halachic basis?
Midin staka.
Okay. So what do you think of that? A parent's obligation to support their child from 6 until, say, 13, or whatever relevant sense of being a gadol kicks in, that chiyev is midin staka. Sorry?
I mean, I don't know if that's so precise. I think he's saying that chiyuv is tachas chachamim, and either way, if we can't, the force of that tachas chachamim, we can't make him feed his children. For some reason, it's just one of those non-enforceable ones. And he says, well, there also is a fallback in of tzedakah, where, you know, like, how do you irfa kod them, and you mishpachta, like, your family comes first. So therefore, he's just saying, well, you know, you plug it in, the kids deserve tzedakah. So,
yeah, I agree with everything you said.
I don't know if the basic din is it stuck at all.
The basic din until six?
No, past six is in the.
Well, past six, there's a takana.
Yeah, past six, that takana is chachamim.
That takana is not midam staka.
Yeah, not necessarily.
That's takana susha, we know.
Yeah.
That's why it's not subject to enforcement.
Right.
But there's a separate din staka.
Which could be.
Which, if you're an amid, if you're gavad amid, if you have money, then you're chayiv to mitam tztaka to support your kids.
I think we're...
Same page, right? Yeah. So my point here is just to say, what do you think of that as being a category of tztaka? Maybe it's straightforward. Maybe it's not a chiddush at all. What do you think, Zolti?
I think it makes sense. Definitely. Also, like, just under the category of Maharif describes
that, yeah, chesed to other people, right? Good. Josh?
I mean, I'd say if you're conceptualizing tzedakah as being like going above and beyond like what the kids are owed or something, I would say it's surprising, although I guess that's how we're characterizing it, but I would say that, you know, the kids deserve, apparently not, but, you know, I think it's surprising that tzedakah is not that kids deserve to get fed by their father.
Kids deserve. Let's unpack this a little bit. Well,
it's right.
Well, it sounds like until 6 years, it sounds like the halacha recognizes that.
Right.
The question is, from six and above, we have to appeal to tztaka to explain it.
They should go work for the coal mine. That's it.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a society where people were working once they were physically able to, and probably like in China today.
100 years ago.
Yeah. And today, same today in other parts of the world. So I guess the question is, would this meet the description of like the child who's 6 years old is an ani and therefore is entitled to tztaka? Or are we saying something a little different, which is, yeah, parents should be supporting their kid, and that basic support for a child itself constitutes a type of tztaka? Let's give you a clear. Imagine you went to somebody in TNEC today, And you said, did you give Meiser? And I said, well, how do you calculate Meiser? And they said, well, you know, 10% of my income goes to paying for my kids' food. So I think on this view, that would certainly qualify as tzedakah. Yes? Benji?
I think our Moshe Meitzin has a chew on this. That since in America, if you don't feed your 11-year-old, then you'll go to jail. Therefore, it's like a chiyuv that you have to feed your 11-year-old, and therefore it's not a it can't be categorized as tzedakah.
It's a big chiddush, no?
Right. But if not for that.
But if not for that for CPS, then yes, it would be considered tzedakah.
Kind of strange that the non-Jewish law should defeat halachic din, no?
Because you can't claim that it's tzedakah.
Why? Why is it not tzedakah in that circumstance?
The same reason why it's not considered tzedakah when you do it for your 3-year-old. It's a chiyuv on you. And if it's a chiyuv, then it can't be tzedakah.
But I'm saying here it's a little strange. You have to say something about Dina. The Malchusa Dina could somehow vitiate its status as stuck up. Why? Because the fact that it's legally enforced?
The Gemara is explicit that that's not the case later on.
Kfiya. And the whole point later on is that you could coerce somebody to give sucka, right?
Yeah, but I'm saying even not Mitana Lasa, right? I think it's even if the protect the government for giving you money, that still considers
sucka. Yeah, the Gemara does have cases like that. That's right. Fine, we can take a look at our Moshe inside and
I'll have to
we'll pull it out. We'll bring it into the Makoros. But so again, this example could be straightforward. You could say, well, otherwise your kid will be an ani, right? Your kid will be starving if you don't support him. Or you could say, well, the reach of tzedakah is broader than we initially thought. It includes an idea of just supporting your family members, right? Making sure that they're provided for. Regular family obligations themselves are part of Hilchos Tzedakah. Rami?
It seems hard to say that because then why isn't it included in the Chiyuv D'Oraisa?
Why isn't it included in the Chiyuv D'Oraisa?
No, or a different way of saying it, what is the Chiyuv D'Oraisa in the first place?
Until six.
If not, you have to support your family members because.
Well, you could just distinguish between what's obligatory, like what is an absolute obligation. And what's an obligation mitam tzedakah?
Right.
So you could say, until six, it's every parent's responsibility, just as a din d'oraisa. Separate. We don't know exactly what that din d'oraisa is. From six and above, it's an application of hilchos tzedakah.
Mitam. You have to
support
your children, not your
mitam a mitzvah to support your children,
but not like because you're like an onion, your child.
Arguably,
so that to me is like you have to explain what the original chiyuv d'oraisa was. That's in a way that's not what you're saying,
right?
Again, I guess to me, I assume that's what the original chiyuv d'oraisa was. So it's hard for me to see how you could say that this.
I understand. Does everybody understand Romy's question? Romy's just saying, how exactly then do you distinguish the chiyuv until 6 years old from the chiyuv post 6 years old?
Right.
Yeah, I'd actually be okay saying that this undermines my comment about the mitzvah d'oraisa, like the which taryag mitzvah is it? I'd be okay saying that even the mitzvah until six is really part of mitzvah tzedakah. But it's automatic in that it doesn't matter whether you're amid.
And what counts the difference for the 6 year mark, like where it becomes a lesser chiyuv?
Because arguably there your kid could work and become self sufficient at that point.
According to that, there should be a change in the level of age.
Maybe. Yeah, I think either way you have to explain the six-year-old cutoff, right? Where does that come from?
Yeah, right.
Like, why do the parents... So Romy's just saying, why do the parents have an obligation until six? Like, what explains that, right? Anybody have an answer? Benji?
I imagine it's like at 6 you're able to roam the street and beg for food.
Or work.
You recognize that you're hungry and that like food will satiate that and you can like appeal to adults that like, have food.
Right.
No, but the infants don't know how to like, you know, get a market. They'll just cry like on the floor.
Maybe.
Yeah, they're independent enough to either make money or beg. Is that your point? But what's the obligation to support them until 6? Where does that come from?
Maybe it won't really.
Otherwise you're just murdering them.
Yeah, you can't just like have a baby.
Like, or like Los Samuel Damriaha or something. Kant in the Metaphysics of Morals says an argument similar to like Noach lo ladam shloai nivra mishanivra. He's like, oh, like a parent did this horrible thing, like bringing a child into the world. The least they could do is to make its existence less miserable, right? That's the obligation. It's like a penalty for bringing the child into the world in the first place, right? If you get, you owe it the responsibility of minimizing the badness of this world.
Where does the realm get the cut off at 6 years old?
Constantly gemaring so is. We're going to look at this. If you look later on in the source sheet here on page 17 and 16, it's all gemaring so is memtes, which we'll look at in greater detail. But the Gemara is not really explicit about what the mechanism is for the pre-6. So let's think about this. I don't have an answer off the top of my head, other than that I just wanted to reinforce the intuition that Tzedakah does apply to the very basic notion of supporting your children from 6 and above. On my reading, I think there's a way to read the Gemara that even up till 6, it's a chiyuv of tzedakah. Just it's an obligatory, non-negotiable chiyuv up till 6. Whereas from 6 and above, it depends on how rich you are. Sorry?
I think number 12 is kind of like the other definition of tzedakah that like, I was quoting like the Rambam, like Mashmagilo, or also the halacha we saw you put in your article about the, or not sure, an article we just saw together, the feast, the ani being tofes from his closest family member.
Yeah.
That just like, yeah, like your closest family member has a certain duty to you, or you have a certain claim on them that to support you.
Yeah.
And just like, that's not a, it's not a, something formal. You don't have to, as in, I think it's a semantic thing. It's like, oh, are you really an ani? It's like, well, yes or no. It doesn't, I think
just depends what right do you have against the person. Like, is there some right that you have? Yeah. That quote from the Rambam we should look at, was it the Taimani translation?
It was, you know, like Yochai Machbili put out like the new one volume. He's putting out a lot of this stuff.
We should look at it carefully. I think that definition probably borrowed from Aristotle. Like what distributive justice is to give to each person their due. Is like that's distributed tzedakah in the sense. Which is very similar to what you were quoting in the Rambam.
There's also
Jay
Masser. I don't think it's a foreign halacha.
Yeah.
I think it's a foreign,
yeah. No, I agree. All right. Any other thoughts on this Rambam before we move on? No? Okay, so when we look at the sugya and mem test, I want us to think critically about how strange is it that supporting your children from 6 and above is an application of tzedakah. Yes? And you could just think about nafkaminas, a parent paying for their kid's secular education. Benji, I'm sure Moshe treats this in the tshuva.
Yeah, I have a problem.
So there, it's not necessarily going for food, per se, but would that be considered an application of tzedakah? I know Moshe says no in that discussion, but the question is, whether his saying no is compelling. You can see why he's saying no. Or most clearly, said, right? One reason why he's saying no is because he just doesn't like the fact that tzedakah will be discharged through just doing all the normal things that parents do. Right? But it doesn't mean that it's halakhically incorrect. Sorry?
Maybe that's not like the right attitude. Maybe fulfilling what you have to do is...
It's the best kind of tzedakah. After all, like even tzedakah itself is just something you have to do. Yeah. So I agree. I'm sympathetic. This is my... See, I think that there's a reinterpretation of tzedakah to be, as you were putting it before, like, oh, just the voluntary giving stuff, not the not the stuff that you're doing to satisfy the needs of others, et cetera, et cetera. If you take that idea of tzedakah as satisfying the needs of others, of course it could be the things that we sometimes today see as obligatory, right? So you could say like, gee, a parent sending their kid to college and yeshiva in Israel, like what, that's not tzedakah, but paying for their neighbor to go to yeshiva in Israel, that is tzedakah. And it's like, what would why should that be the case? But if anything, in the Gemara, you get the notion that your chiyuv to your children after six, of course, is a form of tzedakah. Right? So, yeah, Shmuel?
So, with the example of like yeshiva in Israel, that's a separateness entirely, but common Torah. So, how does that jive with, like,
I'm going to push back just for a second, which is, if I make a donation to yeshiva in Israel, so do you think that's tzedakah?
A donation?
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of what you're saying. That's like the standard way we're perceiving it in today's society. Like,
but I'm saying, isn't it to help people learn Torah?
Right.
Isn't it my chiyuv? I'll call ish v Yisrael that you have a chiyuv to help kids learn.
No, but I mean, you have a more of an obligation towards your kid.
For my kid who's 18 years old, my only chiyuv to my kid who's 18 years old is to not murder him.
Fine. So.
No?
So let's go back to the 5-year-old kid, to the 7-year-old kid.
Same, but the halacha is I have no chiyuv after 6 to support my kids.
But Talmud Torah is different.
So the question is, when does that chiyuv end?
So let's say when you still have the chiyuv of Talmud Torah, is it considered tzedakah?
So I think then it's an interesting question. You're raising an interesting question whether I could fulfill both of them at the same time.
Right, exactly.
But let's assume that the mitzvah of Talmud Torah Labanim is, you know, so long as he's not capable on his own. Once he's capable on his own, why do I have to continue teaching him?
So the question is, when he's not capable, can you do two at once?
Right, I'm saying arguably yes.
Right,
yeah. All right, let's move on to the... I'm going to skip over this section here on Gevi'ah v'Chalukah. That touches on a separate point. And we'll come back to that. I want to quickly mention this Gemara Mabasra Chesam and Beis. L'shanosa l'chol ma she'yirtu. So what's going on in this Sigya? This is where Hashem B'nei Yir comes into discussion. The Gemara distinguishes between a Tamkhoi and a Kupa. So let's... volunteer to take us through this Gemara quickly, Chesam and Beis. Ariel.
Tafen agri b'shlosha and talit b'shlosha. It's collected with three people and given out with three people. Shivui v'chaluk hashem. Tamchoy v'choyam kubul
me'er. So why is a tamchoy need three people for collecting and for distributing?
I guess because the collecting and distributing are considered equal in terms of the responsibilities. Do it or
I think because they happen at the same time. You collect food, and there's such a quick turnover.
Oh, it's not that the values of them are equal, it's that it's happening at the same time?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think the idea is that people are donating and being distributing
every day.
So you need three people for Dine Mamanis to assess how much each person has to give, but you also need three people to determine how much each person is entitled to get.
Romeo? Yeah, isn't that a...
Well, the thought is that.
Later on, it says shlosha for how you need to know all the people in the queue.
What's that?
Later on, it says that you need shlosha because you need to know how much each person needs.
Right. Well, right. So you have to know how much each person needs, and because the tamchui is given out so quickly, you need three people from the beginning. That's the...
Oh, you're right. The halachos are shown, but why you need three in the first case.
Yeah. Okay, kupa is Erev Shabbos, Erev Shabbos. Fine.
Tamkhoi l'ani olam, kupa l'ani
ahir. So this is all interesting questions, like why you have the kupa and tamkhoi, they seem to serve different roles. You have a greater chiyiv to ani ahircha, but there's also a kupa, there's also a something for ani olam. How frequently are they distributed? Fine. For Rashayim.
That they can switch the money that was given to be one or the other as needed. And they, I guess they can change the money to be used for whatever they feel is needed.
Yeah, so that power to change the money to use it for whatever they want to use it for.
Why would it need to specifically mention kupa, tampa, tampa, la kupa, but then it says vishnu, the lafoma, shi, so it's then
included? Yeah, it's a good question. Good question. Let's go to Tosos. Shanos l'chol mashu yirtzu. Here you get a big chiddush. Somebody makes a donation to the town. What could the town do with it?
They can go ahead.
Yeah, whatever they want.
Whatever they need, even something which you would normally need permission for.
Or even l'dvar rishus, even something that's totally, as Josh said, a football stadium, mm-hmm. Right? So you gave money for tzedaka for a food shelter. The town could re-earmark it for the football stadium. Okay? That's a very broad power that Rabbi Tam arrogates to the town, to the ear itself.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's consistent with the language of the Gemara. The Gemara says, L'shanos l'chol ma sheyirtzu. Right, and what are we told? We're told that Chen Hayar Rabbeinu Tam.
No, I was that Me'al Tefufa the Shomer at Yir, and the Dish Al Dat Me'ir and Nosim Al
Dat. Yeah. So, what was Rabbeinu Tam's? What did Rabbeinu Tam do? People made donations to Tzedakah.
He would go ahead and give it to the guards of the city, and he would say that he would do this the way I read it, because it was done like the knowledge of the people of the city knew that he was going ahead and give this money to the Shomer at Yir.
It's not clear if it means that, or if he just means that. When you cut out a check to the city, you assume the risk that the city could do whatever they want with it, right? It's kind of known that it's going to the city's coffers,
uh-huh.
Right? You know, it's like when you write out a check to YU, God knows where the money's going, right? They find ways to put it in all sorts of places. If you think I'm joking, I'm not.
Lunch.
Yeah, that's the least of the issues. You know, but there's, you know, make it, let's say you want to donate a kolel, right? Probably let's say half that money ends up going, this got to pay the security guard in the building and got to pay for the electric costs. And there's like a lot of creative accounting that goes into things, from what I understand. But the Rabbeinu Tam saying that's okay, right? That's okay. Like, you designated it to tzedakah, but it doesn't matter. Like, it's really a black hole. Once the money goes in, the community could do whatever they want with it. It's all das b'nei yir. All right? Everybody with me? Okay. Now, Rabbeinu Tam's diuk is consistent with, I think, just the language of the Gemara. L'shanos l'chol ma sheyirtzu, correct? Ariel, in your diuk, that it distinguishes between tamchoi into a kupa and a kupa into a tamchoi, and then separately, l'shanos l'chol ma sheyirtzu seems to suggest that they literally could do whatever they want with it.
Yeah.
And in Rabbeinu Tam's case, he took most of tzedakah and used it to pay the security guards. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Pretty narrow application.
You think it's narrow?
Meaning, when we said do whatever we want with it, using it for other things that the community
needs. Yeah, that's why I was thinking that.
It's not so crazy.
Other communal needs.
I mean, but it is still not stuck.
Yeah. It's not like Josh's football stadium. And I'm not sure why he calls the Shomrim the Dvar Rishus.
He needs a feel after the Rishus, but that might be a...
It could be. Yeah, unless he's just contrasting it with the Dvar Mitzvah, maybe. Hard to know. But then we get the Rimi Gash, who has a different view. So what does Rimi Gash say? Ariel, you want to tell us about Rimi Gash?
Sure. So, Shim Gabo Gupa, Putira, Velohi Sikwa Hematampoi, Shigabo Rishayan Niknobim, Mimotar Hakupa, Mashatar Hatampoi. There's not enough money left inside of the Tampoi, they could take money from the Kupa to fill up the Tampoi.
Yeah, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So, Kupa Tampoi and Tampoi Kupa means that you could divert money from one type of tzedakah and use it for the other tzedakah. Right? So if you have a tzedakah fund, let's say that's supposed to be just for the Aniyei Ha'ir, you could allocate some of that to the Aniyim outside of the city.
Yeah.
Right? From the soup kitchen, you could use some of that money to go to the food shelter, to the homeless shelter.
But he's pretty explicit afterwards that the Afladar Roshos is
so let's read that. Vidavka
Vidavka Bhupa Tampa Tampa Bhupa Shakotzor Aniyim.
Okay. So the Rimi Gash thinks that you cannot divert stucca money to non-stucca purposes. Yes? It's not clear to me if maybe he didn't have the girsa lishanosa l'chol mashiyirtzu. Maybe he just limits that to within stucca purposes. I guess he could read it that way. What's his argument? Why is it impermissible to use the stucca funds for something else? Josh?
The thing maybe is that Rabbeinu Tam thought that this was about like public goods, like we talked about before. Whereas Rimi Gash is saying that even when the city is the one taking your tzedakah, it's all within the din, within the mitzvah of tzedakah, in which case, as soon as you give the money, it wouldn't make sense to divert it to other public goods, because they were only able to take it and you didn't stucca in the first place. It's meant for anyone.
Yeah, so let's say a little more about that. I think the Rimi Gash is clearly thinking that when the money is given over for tzedaka, that has a very specific destination. It's destined to be Maos Aniyim. Correct? So just like we sometimes say that Matnos Gunar Mamon HaShevet, tzedaka becomes now the Mamon of the Aniyim. It's held in trust by the community. But the owner is considered to be the Aniyim. Okay? And that's why it's no longer permissible to change that to anything else. That would be Gezel Aniyim. All right? Notice, by the way, that the Ani has not yet received anything yet. And so no money has come into his Rishus. Yet, it's considered Gezel Aniyim. So we just want to think about that. In what way is it Gezel Aniyim if it's not yet in the Rishus? No.
It's almost like you say with Truma, where it belongs to Kohen prior to giving it.
Yeah. So maybe there's a sense in which it belongs to the Ani even before it reaches his hand. Is that the idea? Yeah? Romy?
I was going to say, like, it might relate to some of the Rishonim, I think, use the language of, like, Al Das Aniyim Nidhu, or Al Das Takahal Nidhu. And like that seems to that, like that's the issue. I don't know if that relates specifically to the Das of the Notate or just what we assume the
mechanism
fund is, and like, you know, but.
Yeah, so this gets back to what Josh was saying. One way of explaining why Rabbeinu Tam disagrees is to say that they're disagreeing about how you think about the kupa and the tamkoi. Right? It's like, what is this mechanism of a kupa and a tamkoi? So for Rabbeinu Tam, what is it, Josh?
Public good.
Yeah. It's just like the other public goods in town, like the Pase Ha'ir, the Shomrei Ha'ir. Every town has these different public goods. This is one of them, but it's totally permissible to switch from one public good to the next. You guys agree with that?
Why is that true? Meaning?
What would be the basis for that?
Yeah.
You would read the Gemara, let's go back to our friend, to the Rif. You say that, look, Pase Ha'ir is the real paradigm for these different things. Remember we saw this brisa on Sunday. Lamed Yom L'Kupa, Gimel Chadash L'Metamchoy, Shisha L'Ksus, Tisha L'Kvura, Shnei Masa L'Pase Ha'ir. These are all different communal obligations. In fact, there are different times of when you're considered a member of the community vis-a-vis this obligation. Were you a member of the community for a month, for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year? And these are all different goods provided by the community. They all have the same normative force. That's why they're all subject to kfiya. We're not dealing with mitzvos in any sense. We're just dealing with Rashon Benir Lassiel Kitzasa.
I guess the question is why they're not, they called the Kupa and Tamkoi, gave it to the Kupa and Tamkoi. Why are they not locked into that?
Why is the call not locked into that?
Yeah.
Because at bottom, you are just contributing to the Kahal's war chest.
Right.
That's what it is. And the Kahal has different ways of divvying up their war chest. It's like when you pay taxes, right? Maybe some things are Social Security tax, and but at the end of the day, like, you pay your taxes, and the government decides how they allocate it. So maybe the government kind of said, here's the budget, but it's really up to them how they want to reallocate their budget. Everybody agree with that? If that reading is correct, then we'll say, look, the Tamchoi and the Kupa, maybe Tosos wants to go so far as to deny the Rimigash's point. Maybe it's not Gezlaniyim, because the Kupa and the Tamchoi is just the intention that the Kohal has about how they're going to use the funds. But it's not that this is held in trust for the Aniyim. It requires a separate act of distribution to say that this becomes the Aniyim's money. So the Kupar and the Tamchoi then would be very different from classic tzedaka, where it's money that's given to a poor person, money that's owed to them. Here it's really just part of the community's war chest. Yeah, and the Rimigash would disagree and say, no. There's a major difference between the Rosh Chodesh B'nai Ha'ir for the Paseh Ha'ir and the Tzarech Ha'ir. That's all one category, but Tzedakah has its own obligation. Josh, that's what you were saying.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I think this kind of distinction also comes up by even by personal Tzedakah. Like if you have a little Tzedakah box in your house, doesn't have any organization on it, and you put money in there, big halachic chat about the status of that money. Most people say, it is your money, and you can do a big change with it, you can do all sorts of stuff, but it just means you're saying, I want to end up giving this amount of money to Tzedakah. But those coins and those whatever, I think here it's even more so.
Here it's even more so, because...
This idea of there being a Rubicon, this transition point between when does the money actually get it versus when is
Right.
It's just a pledge.
Except that here I want to distinguish a little differently and say that the question is about the communal institutions of the Kupa and the Tamchoi. Are those deriving their halachic status from Hilchos Yerideya? Of this is a way of discharging your tzedakah obligation? Or does it derive its status from Hilchos Shechinim, which is the simanim of a community's power to impose taxes, raise money for public goods, etc. Does everybody see that? I think Josh is suggesting, and I was suggesting, that the Machlokas Rimigash and Avinu Tam might turn on that issue. If the Kupa and the Tamchoi stems from Yerideya, from pure Tzedakah principles, then it would be very surprising to say that you could deviate it to build a stadium or pay the shomrim. That would be gezel aniyim in the Rimigash sense. But if you think that the Tamchoi and the Kupa stem from Hilchos Shechinim, it's just another public good institution of the community, the public good here being to help out the poor or help out the community that did not have poor people, then it's totally reasonable that you could change it. Romy, you have a comment on this?
I think it's hard to say that this isn't a Rosh Hashanah B'nai Ha'ir power.
It's hard to say it's not a Rosh Hashanah B'nai Ha'ir power?
It's hard to say it's not a Rosh Hashanah B'nai Ha'ir power, yeah. Because of the way the Bryce is, formulated. There's a few bunch of powers that the B'nai Ha'ir have, and no reason to think that they're particularly different.
Except that you could read the Rosh Hashanah B'nai Ha'ir as just explaining why you could go from Tamchoi to a Kupa and Kupa to a Tamchoi.
And then what about the next line?
L'shanos l'chamashi yirtzu?
No, I thought that was part of the first one, but the last bit.
Then we're moving into just separate, the Gemara is getting carried away with Rosh Hashanah B'nai Ha'ir Braisa, or quoted.
The B'nai Ha'ir has the power to mess around with their tzedakah funds within the tzedakah funds.
Exactly. And the halakhic category is tzedakah. How exactly that tzedakah is distributed between the Aniyim, which group of Aniyim, for Kavura, for...
And separate power, they have power over everything else.
Correct.
But the really super broad power that encompasses all of their economy doesn't include the tzedakah.
Right, because it's reasonable to think that the money already belongs to the Aniyim. If they're just providing a service of holding the money in trust for Aniyim, then you could say, sure, there are different ways to give it to Aniyim. Through a Tamchoi, through a Kupa, through Achnas Eskala, through a Bigor Cholim type thing. And the community could decide how they want to do tzedakah.
Wouldn't you say the same thing for any other thing? We're collecting money for security. Now we want to divert it for something else. Oh, well, everyone
No, because you could say that...
that never goes to infinite.
Well, no, because you could say that those other things are have no ground other than Hilchos Shechinim. Like Bava Basra Dav Zayin, Kofizazeh, Livinos Beishar, Delas, etc. So if the source of those different powers is the Rashaim B'nei or Lasi Al-Kitzathan, so they can move seamlessly between those, the stadium building, the road paving, the fire station, the police department, the army, right? Public education. But if the kahal here is really just doing a service to help people fulfill mitzvah tzedakah, then you could say the, right, it doesn't bottom out, it doesn't derive its force from Hilchos Shechinim, so then the kahal doesn't have full power to transfer the funds to a Shechinim halakha. That make sense? Yeah. Questions on this? Comments? Okay, so let's get into the discussion of Kfiya B'Tzedakah. This is going to be our sugya for the next two shiurim or so. The Gemara on Chesam Beis calls tzedakah, the collection of tzedakah, a srara. That's why you need two people to collect, at least two people to collect. Yes? So, why is tzedakah considered a srara, Josh Hurt? Why is tzedakah called srara?
I don't know.
What?
I don't know.
What does the Gemara say in Chesam Beis?
The Fishim are mashvim and call it tzedakah. So they can, like, take it. They can seize it.
How?
What do you mean?
How do they seize it?
They take it from you. They knock on your door.
By force. Yeah. Right? Against your will. So the reason why tzedakah is considered to be a srara, and therefore the you have to have at least two gabayim, is because tzedakah could be taken coercively. So if you don't want to get tzedakah, they come into your house and they take some sort of valuable item as payment for your tzedakah obligation. Yes? Okay. The Gemara then quotes a pasuk. What do you mean? It sounds like it's really bad to force people into giving tzedakah, to pressure them into giving tzedakah. The Gemara says, no, depends on the case. What's the Gemara's distinction, Josh?
If you're rich, then they can take it against your
will. Yeah, Rashi says it means if you're rich, if you're an Ashir. We'll see the Or Zeruah says that it means you just are capable. Right? You could withstand the burden that they're taking from you. Okay? And then the Gemara gives us an example. What's the illustration, Josh?
Rabba forced Rav Nazam bar Ami to get tzedakah.
Yeah, how much? Arba mea
zuzeh.
Litzdaka. How much is that? 400 zuz.
200 goats.
How much is 400 zuz?
200 goats.
Nah, it's not only it's 200 goats, is it?
That's the exchange rate.
It trades a day.
Is that the exchange rate?
It's a joke. Okay. In the song, you...
Yeah. Got it.
Josh, it went over worse this time than it did
in the city. I thought you were not
considering. Two ksubas.
Well, like two ksubas.
Ksubas during like a year's, 5 months for a year.
Yeah, exactly. A ksuba is usually seen as the cost of living for a person for a year. So this is double that. So that's a substantial amount, right? He took
$80,000. According to the Judaism dot
stack exchange, one of those is worth
around $20.
Well, that's not so helpful. You have to be careful what you read on the internet, because what they mean by that is they mean something like the silver content of the zuz by today's value of silver. They're not talking about the purchasing power.
They said in terms of food. It's
what?
Yes, it said in terms of food, a zuz worth about $20.
What does that mean in terms of food?
The purchasing power. Purchasing power. But then why specify specifically?
Yeah, what does that mean in terms of food?
1.2 golden muffins. Yeah. There's a link to our Wikipedia page. I can send it out.
All right, send it out. Let's go with Zechariah's metric now that it's about 2 years worth of cost of living for an individual. That's a substantial amount, right? So what do we take out of this Gemara? That
Robin Hood was good.
That what?
Robin Hood. That you can steal money from the rich and give it to the poor.
That's exactly what you should take away from this. No.
No. That's what this is, isn't it?
Why are you stealing from the rich?
Well, if you assume that Amid is... Oh, I assume that guy was rich.
You're making legal.
Why are you stealing?
Well, you could take.
Well, you could take. What are you taking? What are you taking?
Money.
Okay. So, is that bad? You're taking what he owes. You're taking what he owes for tzedakah.
You're saying Robin Hood was like acting with him.
I need to know a little more about what Robin Hood was up to.
I'm gonna stop referencing.
Answer that. I think what you take away from this Gemara is that you could force somebody to satisfy their tzedakah obligation, right? Does that sound right? If they could afford it, if they're a gavra d'amid. Now, you might just say that what's the significance of amid and lo amid? That just means whether they have the obligation in the first place. Someone who's not capable of giving tzedakah doesn't have the tzedakah obligation. Well, which Rambam? So I would say there's a question here. What is the role of the amid doing? So you could say that if you're not amid, then you don't have the same stock. You don't have a stock obligation, right? You're not chayv to become poor to give tzedakah. But if you are amid, then you have an obligation. Once you have an obligation, then it's coercible or enforceable. Pardon me?
I'm just curious about the framing in terms of, like, it doesn't say it exactly in terms of obligation, meaning...
Well, it says litzedakah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's just saying that you must have an obligation. I guess I'm just saying, like, there's no indication that, like, if you had given a certain amount of tzedakah already, then you would be cut from this.
Well, that just means that the tzedakah obligation...
Yeah, depending on the need, or...
Yeah. Well, that's our question. What's the shear of tzedakah, right? How much does a person have to give? Lots of people just think in terms of miser, but that's clearly not correct from the sugya. I think we saw this a little bit in our earlier discussion. Okay. So this Gemara is probably the most important source for the idea that you could coerce somebody to give tzedakah. We'll see it comes up again in Ksuvis Memtes. But I want to draw your attention to one source in the Or HaZeruah before we look at Tosis' analysis. So anybody see the Or HaZeruah, Chelek Aleph, Hilchos Tzedakah? Just want to say that there's a bit of a mystery why the Or HaZeruah starts off with Hilchos Tzedakah. There's some historical points that people make that in Ashkenaz in the Middle Ages, like tzedakah was like the biggest deal because they were all trying to raise money. So in Sefer Hasidim, tzedakah features very prominently. The Or HaZeruah starts off with Hilchos Tzedakah. That's like, imagine if the Rambam started off with Hilchos Tzedakah instead of Mada. Right, you think that's pretty strange, but the Or HaZeruah does that. So, just something to think about why tzedakah features so prominently. The Or HaZeruah says this, citing our Gemara: Hecha de lo amid ein memashkenoso, aval hechi de amid v'lav dafka ashir elafilu shiyesh sipek biyado litein. As long as the guy is capable of giving, will force him to give. So there's nothing special about stealing from the rich. It's just about taking from people who are able to afford tzedakah. He says, Mimashkenoso. And he cites this, Kedetanu Rabbanan. Yeah. So what's going on in this Kedetanu Rabbanan? Rasha Mbine Yerlasi Akit Sasa and Liknos is over. Akitas Devrei and Lasia Midas Din Torah. Ned? Well, yeah, communal authority. That's right. I think this Or HaZeruah, what's he doing? He's appealing to the concept of Rashayim B'nei Ayir La'asiyah Kitzasan to explain why Rabba was able to coerce Rav Nasan to give tzedakah. Meaning what? We are not dealing here with Hilchos Tzedakah of Yeridea. We're not dealing with Hilchos Manasaniyim. We're dealing with Hilchos Shchinim, Rishonim Benir, La'asiyah al-kitas on a communal power to coerce for publicans. I think that's just so clearly what the Or Zarua is doing in this line. And then he cites the fact that Rava was Kofa. But the basis, the legal authority for coercing is La'asiyah midas din Torah. This has nothing to do with the pure principles of tzedakah. Are we in agreement on that? It's very clear that we're in Hilchos Shchinim land. They could coerce for the security, so they could also coerce for the tzedakah that they want you to give. Josh?
So when we say the word tzedakah here, we mean in like a loose term? Or like, do you mean, what does it mean then that the money's been tzedakah? Like we're giving it to an Indian?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. Not under the halachic legal principle of tzedakah. Yeah, but in the colloquial sense of helping out the poor. Yeah, great point.
You can also say, like, it's definitely a fume of tzedakah on the guy's part. But you're saying the force of the collections.
Yeah, 100%. What explains the legal authority is not Hilchos Tzedakah. It's the Rashan Bnei Eir, La'asiyah al-kitasa, La'asiyah midas din Torah. Sounds like you might even want to say that there's no din Torah obligation to give this amount of tzedakah. So here's an afkamina. Like, was Rava obligated, d'oraisa, to give this amount of tzedakah? And Rava was just doing this. Was Nasan obligated to give this amount, and Rava was just doing the assessment to determine that? Or are we saying, no, Rav Nasan was not obligated under Yoredeh to give this amount of tzedakah, but there was like a special communal assessment that they wanted to impose on him based off their power of Hefker Bezen Hefker, La'asiyah midas din Torah, that type of power. And the Or Zarua seems to be saying this is all non-stucca principles. Yeah? So I just think the Sora Zerua is a very clear marker for this. Tosvos, very famously on Daf Ches, raises a challenge for this kfiya. What's Tosvos' question? Rami? Rim Tomar?
Rim Tomar, Habker, Kolbasar, Amar, Komis, Lashir, Matan, Tchara, Tuvishida, So we generally say that any time there's a mitzvah, I say that where like the pasuk concludes what your star would be for fulfilling the mitzvah, so you can't be forced to fulfill the mitzvah because the implication is your punishment is not getting the star that's listed in the pasuk.
Okay. Just say a little more precisely how you're translating Ein Bezen Shel Matan Mutzharen Aleha.
I said force, but that's not the direct translation, I guess. You don't know what it is.
Yeah, how do you translate it? You're right about everything else. I just wanted to explain this. Ein Bezen Shel Matan Mutzharen Aleha. What do the words mean?
That a Bezen can't. I don't know how to translate it in a way that fits the sentence. Like warn him about it or something. Like
Muzharim. I think that's a passive.
It's a concern.
No?
They have no concern with it.
What?
They have no business with it.
They have no business? How about this translation? Any positive mitzvah that specifies, whose reward is specified explicitly, a lower bezdin, a bezdin in this world, is not warned over it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they're not cautioned about it.
They're not obligated to care about it.
Basically. Yeah, yeah. Meaning, like, they're not liable. Right? They're not warned over it.
Interesting. Strange way to put it.
Well, what is that? So we'll see why that's important. But that it means that one way of saying it is that it's not in the jurisdiction of a Bezen Shel Matan, which is closer to what you were saying. Another way of saying it is that a Bezen Shel Matan is not responsible. Right? It's not responsible for it. But either way, in Tosos' formulation, the point is supposed to be that whenever the Torah explicates schar for a mitzvah's asay, somehow that takes it out of the responsibility of a bezin enforcing performance in that mitzvah say? Yes? Okay, why is that? What's the idea there supposed to be?
Oh, why not?
Yeah?
Because
I think you said it earlier.
Because the pasuk says with the schar el get, I think the implication is that, you know, the punishment for not doing it is you won't get the schar, so therefore you can't be punished.
Exactly. The Torah outlines what it is that you're going to get or not get by fulfilling or failing to fulfill the mitzvah. It's not something that Beis Din needs or ought to step in for enforcement. Okay? That itself, I think, is very intriguing. What we're told here is that there's a category of mitzvos that the wrongdoing for them or the schar for them is just whether or not you want this reward. Is that the idea? Or there's like a special subset of mitzvos that if you want the bracha, great. If you don't want the bracha, don't pursue it. But there's no wrongdoing or communal interest in enforcing it beyond that. Is that the idea?
I wouldn't say that there's no wrongdoing. I don't think Tosfos would say there's no chiyuv of individuals to do it.
So maybe there's a chiyuv, but
it's like between you and Hashem.
So it's a different class of.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, shaking lulav is an example of mitzvah say that's subject to kfiyah.
Right.
But it's not matan tzemach potatoes. That's also you want. I think it's just between you and Hashem, but still. The reason why I'm just drilling down on this is because we saw a lot about, you know, the Lefnei Mishuras HaDin versus Din as these two different halachic categories. And then now, again, we're carving up the halachic space within mitzvah say, and we're saying, well, some of them are subject to kfiyah, some of them are outside of kfiyah in an interesting way. But that's determined by whether matan schar and betzeda. I'm just trying to understand what's the significance of matan schar and betzeda. And actually, if you saw the Shita Mekubetzes, Bava Kama Kuftes Vav, which we saw earlier in the year, citing the Rimmel O'Neill, you guys remember what he said? He said that a Beis Din's non-coercing, this was the in the context of our discussion whether you could be kofa on Lefnei Mishuras HaDin. Where did we see that discussion? Yeah, Runya 2. Very good. He said, "Afagav de mitzvah al b'nei bris lasos lefnei mishuras hadin." Even though it's a mitzvah to always go lefnei mishuras hadin. Afilu achi ein lahachriach kol adam lasos lefnei mishuras hadin. Mishum de dami lahay da amrina ba'alma chol mitzvah shematan scharim betzeda in bezun mitzvah lahachriach adam alaha. So to my mind, this is like a mind-blowing analogy. That somehow Lefnim Mishuras HaDin as a category is conceptually analogous to the category of Mitzvah Seh Shematan Tzcharim Betzeda. And he says that actually in a literal sense, because he says, Kimochein b'mitzvahs Lefnim Mishuras HaDin Matan Tzchar Betzeda, how? Kedarminan hider mitzvah ad shlish Mishalo, mikan ve'elach mishal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, klomar shemishalim lo scharo ba'olam hazeh. Kind of a strange raya. That hider mitzvah above a certain amount, you get schar in this world for, and that's supposed to be analogous to lifnim mishuras hadin. Like, is he saying that lifnim mishuras hadin is a type of hider mitzvah?
Or maybe hider mitzvah is lifnim mishuras hadin, no?
But then why does it follow that all of Lefnim Mishuras HaDin is Matan Schar and Betzeda? Right? Whatever. So you got to figure out what he's saying at the end here. But as a category, he seems to be saying that Lefnim Mishuras HaDin is conceptually related to the category of Mitzvah Seh Shematan Schar and Betzeda. And in the same way that we think that Lefnim Mishuras HaDin, for Rabbi Yerucham, the Rush, and the Beis Yosef that we saw in the Runya discussion, their whole point is that by definition, Lefnim Mishuras HaDin is not subject to Kfiyas Beis Din. That's what it means for it to be Lefnim Mishuras HaDin. So too, Mitzvah Seh Shematan Tzcharim B'Tzeda is not subject to Kfiyas Beis Din.
Just to get concrete, like the archetypal example of Matan Skarbasida is Kibarabi. I feel like it seems not correct to claim that Reb Lanil would say, oh, Kibarabi aim is
the interest of
him in all aspects. In level of obligation. Like, that's it.
Right.
One notable. Like, no one would say it's Lifnimi Shustin to do Kibarabi.
Right. Right.
So I'm not sure what aspect they're fit to be compared.
Yeah, well, notice this formulation seems to imply that Lefnim Mishur Sadin is an instance of Mitzvah Seishim Adam Tzchar B'Teda. Mishum Didami Lahai Darmina Baal Makom Mitzvah Seishim Adam Tzchar B'Teda Matam Eid Mezen Shamatam Mitzvah Nachriach Adam Aleha. Kimochin B'Mitzvah Lefnim Mishur Sadin Matam Tzchar B'Teda. Right, it seems to be saying that the general rule is Matam Tzchar B'Teda, that has an application in Lefnim Mishur Sadin. Now, you might say that just destroys our intuitions about why Lefnim Mishuras Hadin is not subject to coercion. Right here, it's circuitous, right? It just comes from this other halachic thing. Those weren't the intuitive reasons why the Rush and the Beis Yosef endorsed non-kfiyah for Lefnim Mishuras Hadin. But this does suggest that there's a common rationale for both of them. Yeah, right, Rumi? Which is, it's puzzling. Yes. So we have to end here, but we want to think about why. What's this idea of Matan Tzchar B'Tzeda? What other examples? So far, we have Staka, according to Tosos, Kibud Aveim, according to the Gemara in Chulin, which we'll look at, and Lefnim Mishuras Hadin. And then we want to start thinking about the different answers of Tosos as to why you're able to be kofet on Staka if it's an example of Matan Tzchar B'Tzeda. Okay? Of course, the Or Zerua already gave us an answer. Did the Or Zerua already give us an answer? Kobe?
Yeah, he says.
Yeah, meaning the kfiya here is not based on mitzvah. Right? What?
Based on the mitzvah of tzedakah, you're saying.
Yeah, correct. Okay. Maybe it's the mitzvah of listening to the town or something like that. Yeah, very good. All right, good. So we'll pick up with this discussion on Thursday. Shkayach, everyone.